Everybody thinks their son is so special. Nobody ever wants to hear, "This is why my kid is even more special than any other." So, I'm not gonna say it. Frankie doesn't like the attention anyways, so I try to hide it. But there's only so much a mother can do. When he grabbed my arm in the grocery store checkout line, then asked me, in full hearing of a strange man in a beanie, "Why is this robbery going to end badly for that man in the hat?" There was simply no time for me to react to that. The man stared daggers at Frankie, then turned and ran for the door. The SOB shot himself in the foot on the way out, and Frankie was in counseling for 6 months. Can you believe that? Eventually, I told him he had to convince the therapist he'd made up his story. "You mean I have to lie to him?" he asked, gray eyes dolefully innocent. I swallowed hard. "Yeah, Frankie, lying is bad, but sometimes the truth is much worse." Something in his eyes shifted. "Why?" The simplicity of his question was excruciating. "Because," I sputtered, letting out a whoosh of air, "you are special." The shift in his eyes became complete somehow. Panicked, I couldn't tell if I had actively killed a part of him or if he'd grown up just a little bit. In retrospect, of course, I realized that the two are the same thing. "I'm drawing a helicopter," Frankie said matter-of-factly, though I couldn't tell if the lower appendages were feet or wheels. "The other picture is of a closet monster, but it's okay because it protects children even if they don't know it." "Oh, that's nice, dear," I said dismissively as I poured my fourth cup of coffee. "Mom," he said, putting down his colored pencil and looking at me curiously, "what's a prostitute?" I spat out a little bit of my coffee. It's someone who takes care of very bad boys, but only grown-ups," I added, seeing the look of concern on his face. "Oh." He wrinkled his forehead. He was quiet for several seconds more. "Well, then why does the man in apartment 1913 think he's going to kill one of them?" I dropped my coffee mug to the floor that time, the porcelain shattering on the tiles. What? How could you think? No. Frankie kept his forehead crinkled, then went back to coloring. "He knows it's a bad idea, Mommy. It's just that he's decided that some of the bad ideas are used to erase the worst ones." Now I ask you, all of you dear listeners, what would you have done? If Frankie had been full of shit, how would my conversation have gone? "Hi, I'm your neighbor from two floors down. You planning on killing any hookers tonight? No? Sorry to bother you. Here's some muffins." And if Frankie were right, the man wasn't going to confess jack shit, or I'd be killed next. Should I have called the cops? Well, what would I have told them? "Hi, my son is so fucking psychic that I can't fantasize about any men or watch any smut anymore. Anywho, be sure to check for dead hookers that I possess shocking amounts of information about." Now, don't get me wrong, I thought hard about what the best decision was, which is why I did nothing. So I was stabbed with guilt when I saw paramedics moving a gurney out of the man's apartment the next morning. I stood, transfixed, as they wheeled it outside, then stepped away to fill out some paperwork. I was pulled, trance-like, toward the stretcher. A lifeless body was covered in a slightly damp white sheet. I watched rather than felt as my hand reached out and pulled the sheet away from the body's head. It was my upstairs neighbor, or what was left of him. His face had been slashed along a diagonal line. His left cheek was unfurled and lay by his ear, exposing all the teeth on that side of his head. The right eye was popped, leaving a bloody pool in the ravaged socket. The tip of his nose was nowhere to be seen. The stump looked like the woody inside of a split walnut. My, he had been busy. I dropped the sheet on his chest and ran inside. Frankie was coloring again. He glanced up at me in concern as I slammed the door behind me. I leaned against the frame, body trembling, breath heaving. You shouldn't have looked, he explained calmly.
You said it would be the prostitute who died.
Frankie's face was inscrutable.
I said, why did he think he was going to kill the prostitute?
It was obviously a bad idea, since she was a kickboxer and he was really fat. He then turned back to the picture he'd been coloring and was once again lost in his work. I guess he didn't realize it was going to end badly for him, too. Frankie was snuggled up against my left side, sleepy eyes staring lazily at the words in front of us. I stroked his sandy blonde hair with my left hand as I held the book with my right. His ample Tyrannosaurus Rex pajamas folded snugly around him as his eyelids grew heavy. The supple fabric felt warm against my bare thigh. Only those skilled at occlumency are able to shut down those feelings and memories that contradict the lie, I read soothingly, and so utter falsehoods in his presence, without detection. Mommy, he mumbled sleepily, is occlumency real? I smiled and landed a soft kiss on the top of his scalp. No, monkey, occlumency isn't real. Then why did you do it? He droned back even more slowly. I pulled my head back to look at him. What did you say? Frankie yawned. Why do you sometimes shut down your feelings and memories when you're around me? I consciously slowed my breathing. I don't do that, Frankie. I was calm and collected. His eyes were now completely closed, face pressed against my ribcage. Yes, you do, Mommy. I can tell you're doing it when your mind is clear, but your heart starts beating really fast. Frankie was crying. I don't want to move again, he wailed. I wiped the sweaty strands of hair from my face in exasperation as I filled another cardboard box with kitchen utensils. Frankie, your whining isn't helping. We're leaving whether you like it or not, so you might as well just stop the complaining for 10 seconds and... But we just moved here 5 months ago, he sniffled. You're making it so that I can't have any friends in my life. I'll admit, that last part stung. It was in a whisper tone, too. Totally unaggressive and utterly disappointed. He knew just how to hurt me. Of course he did. I turned and gave him my best mom glare, the one that told him a line was about to be crossed. He stared back, inscrutable, for a few moments. Then he abruptly stopped crying and turned around to go pack things in his room. We'd been on the road for an hour, and I felt exhausted about the ceaseless conversation. I turned to look at Frankie in the passenger seat. He was staring, transfixed, as the Kansas Prairie flew by. That's when I realized that we hadn't spoken a goddamn word for the entire trip. I was standing on a motel balcony in Liberal at 2 a.m. in the morning and smoking a cigarette. The night sky seemed so huge and utterly immune to time. It reminded me, somehow, of life that had slowly been measured out in coffee spoons. Too little to notice in the moment, and all at once, it's gone. It's too late for coffee now. Frankie's voice scared the absolute shit out of me. The cigarette tumbled to the ground below. Frankie, damn it! I told you! And then he wrapped me in a bear hug. I immediately shifted gears. What's wrong, monkey? Nothing. I just thought you needed to shift gears. He let go and stared back up at me. He looked so deceptively fragile in the moonlight. You're always feeling guilty about the fact that I piss you off sometimes, even though we love each other. You feel inadequate because you don't know how to explain to a child that the people you love the most are the ones that piss you off the most, because it's a contradiction you don't understand yourself. He then slid his tiny hand into my larger one and squeezed it. Don't worry, Mom. I hear enough people to know that all good parents are torn by that. I was almost asleep, and I had been sure that Frankie, who was in the bed next to me, was completely out. He started talking in the dark. Mom, you know what happened between you, Stephanie, and her boyfriend back in college was actually your idea. You'd been imagining it for a while. Stop blaming Jack Daniels. He then flopped to his left side, fast asleep. We were packing up again, efficiently, methodically. Everything that got taken into a hotel room had a purpose. Everything in the car had its place. Nothing we brought with us was unnecessary. All packed, kiddo? I asked as I zipped up my lime green toiletries bag. He was filling his miniature backpack methodically. Mom, I wish you wouldn't hide things from me. He looked up and his steel gray eyes bored into mine. I wish that you wouldn't lie to yourself about why we're always running away. It was getting harder to conceal my emotions, and he was getting better at knowing when to exploit them. I turned around to finish packing. Frankie, you don't understand. Because if you were more honest with your emotions, Mom, I'd be able to help you. You would realize that there's no point running away, because the past is always going to catch up with us, regardless. I turned back slowly to find him staring directly at me. For the life of me, I couldn't think of anything to say. I know that you can't think of anything to say for the life of you, Mom, and that's okay. Because I don't need you to hide the truth anymore. I need us to find it. I grabbed my hair with both fists. Frankie, I know we don't have time to discuss this, Mommy. And that's why I can't pretend anymore. My blood then turned to ice. Frankie rubbed his hands against his eyes sleepily, then sat down on the bed to fasten the Velcro on his shoes. I sat down on the other bed. My son looked up at me. I understand that you love me, even though I piss you off, he explained. But what I don't get is why you love Dad so much, and now hate him so much, and hate the little part of yourself that still loves him, and you're afraid of him all at once. He crinkled his little forehead. And why do you work so hard to keep that part of your mind hidden from me? My head spun. I grasped for words that eluded me like spinning teacups on that damn amusement park ride. Why do we need to talk about this right now, Frank? I mustered meekly. He looked sad. Because he's what we're running from, isn't he? He peered down at his shoes awkwardly. That's the part that I'm guessing, because you hide the truth really well. I closed my eyes so that the tears weren't visible, even if he saw right through my guise. You don't need to know that right now. I can't explain it to you, Frankie. Just have faith in me when I tell you that this isn't the right time. I opened my dampened eyes. You're growing up way too fast as it is. Just let this part take its time. For both of us. He got awkward again and started fidgeting with the straps on his backpack. See, though, you're wrong, Mom. His fingers were working furiously, twisting and untwisting the woven nylon. Because Dad finally found us, and I can feel how angry he is. As a matter of fact, he's outside the motel right now. I stared at Frankie for far too long. I wanted to ask questions. I wanted to react. I wanted to do anything besides gawk at him vacantly, wondering how everything had gone so wrong. And then I ran to the door. I cracked it slightly open and just barely stuck my head outside. Nothing to the left, nothing to the right. I pulled my head back in and resolved to triple lock the door while I spent no more than 4 minutes planning our next move. But the door didn't close. I pushed harder, and then it burst open, sending me staggering backwards. Before I could regain my balance, a man's arm sailed through the air and exploded on my face. Your face is so pretty, Chuck gushed as he pulled my waist into his. But goddamn, woman, your body. Hot. I coyly tried to push against his embrace, but he was far too strong for me to provide even playful resistance. He buried his scratchy chin into my neck and bit me ever so slightly. I loved the feeling of his whiskers. I felt so delicate in his arms when he grabbed me like that. We were both 22 years old and swooning. I don't think I stopped smiling for a year. Nothing could have gone wrong until things went all wrong. I was crying that night, sobbing inconsolably, if I'm being honest. There's no feeling to compare with knowing you can't control your own crying. If you've never been there, I cannot explain it. What the fuck did you expect, Ginny? He was coming to you, to hurt us. It was raining that night. My face was soaked. You can't be sure of that. God fucking damn it, Virginia. He followed us out of the bar.
Someone has been keeping tabs on us for months. I did what I had to do to protect us. He then reached for my trembling arms. To protect you, he added in a whisper and utterly disappointed. He knew just how to hurt me. Chuck then took my forearms in his hands and pulled. I couldn't stop crying, but I did snap back from his grip. You killed him, I shrieked, pointing at the motionless body, limp in the dim glow of the street lamp. You fucking killed him. You said that you'd never use your mind to hurt anyone again. I'll kill anyone who threatens my wife. We don't know that he wanted to do that, I screamed as loudly as I could. I wanted to tear the night apart, to send the rain back up to the sky, to kill the bastard on the ground a second time for splitting us apart. Chuck got eerily calm. You know exactly what he wanted, Virginia. It's the same thing they've always wanted from us. Why do you think we never meet any other special people? What happened to them? What would happen to us? I turned and began to walk in the other direction. I had no idea where I was going, but it had to be away from here, away from him, away from whatever miserable part of myself that he would always have. You know what, Jenny? You should drop the fucking judgment. I didn't turn around, though. Because if what I did to him was so terrible, Virginia, then why didn't you just divert what I was doing? Huh? Isn't your best trick protecting me from myself? We both know what you can do with your mind is much stronger than me. So why didn't you save him if you're such a goddamn saint? I turned around slowly and walked toward him with measured deliberateness. He actually seemed taken aback. I can't control the violence in your mind, Chuck. There's just way too much of it. He stared meekly at me, but offered no defense. There was a time when I thought I could change it. I really, really did. I thought I could tame you. I buried my head in my hands now. The rain poured through my hair, over my eyelids, between my fingers. I lifted my face to confront him strongly, firmly, and finally. I can't wait for you to let me control it any longer, Chuck. I'm pregnant. Frankie screamed and that yanked me out of my daze. I was lying on the floor, lightheaded and distant. My face throbbed with white-hot pain. The room was far away, but my son's shriek brought me down like a honing beacon. I raised myself to my wobbly knees. Frankie was scrambling across the bedsheets. Chuck, to whom the years had clearly not been kind, had jumped onto the mattress in an attempt to chase him down. Chuck reached out an arm that narrowly missed our son's ankle. Rage contorted Chuck's face as he watched our son elude him. He stared intently at Frankie as our boy jumped from the bed onto the floor. Frankie screamed in pain and hit the ground. He grabbed his shoulder, now coated in blood, and rocked back and forth in agony. Have you ever been paralyzed in terror by a man in your life? There's no comparison. There's no description. Fear locked every joint in place as I watched the man I once loved, more than anyone on earth, rise to his feet and walk toward our son. Frankie whimpered. He ruined everything, Jenny. Everything. Chuck prattled with more than a hint of craziness. They told me all about what he can do. He's evil, you know, and he's the reason we aren't together. It would all be different if it weren't for him. He then turned to me and smiled. The memory of uncontrollable sobbing was overwhelming. Everything can go back to how it was once they have him, Jenny. He's evil and they need him. Trust me. Chuck then grinned far too wide. His teeth had yellowed. Your face is so pretty, honey. Mom, he's gonna kill me, and he can do it with his mind. Mom, please help me. It all happened all at once, somehow dreamlike and real, instantaneous and unending. Chuck turned, full of malice, and poured his thoughts into my son. I then diverted it. The ability had laid unused for years, but it was still there, sharp as a tack and ready to fight. I had sworn to keep it under wraps for the rest of my life. Once I had accepted my failure to contain Chuck, I knew that it would always do more harm than good. I had never even diverted my own son's intrusive prodding of my mind, not once. But this diversion was successful. I felt the malice pull away from Frankie. I felt Chuck push harder, and I screamed. Then I knew. Whatever had been left of Chuck was long gone, taking the part of me that he still owned with him. And he was going to keep pushing and pushing and pushing until... You're gonna kill yourself, Chuck. Not if you fucking stop fighting with me, Ginny. The fissures began there. Diverting took every part of me. My mind was breaking. I had never even come close to pushing it this far. And neither had Chuck. Don't fight with me, Ginny. Don't make me fight you. He then screamed, and blood poured from his nose. Stop it, Chuck. Stop now. You're gonna die. More fissures met like fault lines in my head as my mind was pushed. Pushed further and further, and it wasn't meant to be pushed this far. Chuck then screamed, and I screamed. I could feel his final push. It was a challenge. Will you really do this? Will you really push it to the end? And I understood that he would. Despite the damage, I knew that I was still strong enough to pull back and walk away. I always had before. I looked down at Frankie and back up to Chuck and closed my eyes. I made my decision. I'd made it long ago, to be perfectly honest. I wasn't sure if I ever spoke the words or simply thought them. At that point, however, there really was no difference. You shouldn't have forced me to choose, Chuck. The tears were the only physical sensation I could feel. You damned yourself by putting me in this position. There was a breaking pain, but that was mental. I wish you weren't as weak as you chose to believe I was. Chuck realized, far too late, that I wasn't going to back off. The struggle reached a crescendo, and my ears popped. Chuck's eyes grew wide and his mouth gaped open like he was going to scream. Blood exploded from his ears and he crumpled to the floor. My head rushed like I was inhaling the first delicious gasp of oxygen after nearly drowning. I fell to the floor and scrambled blindly toward Frankie. He was sobbing silently, grabbing his bleeding shoulder, but he was otherwise unhurt. I wrapped him in the most gratifying hug of my life. I tried to tell him to stop crying before realizing that the wailing was coming from my own mouth. We rocked back and forth. Time went by. Okay, I sniffed. It's time to get up, monkey. Dazed, he reached for his bag. Leave it there, Frankie, I whispered, grabbing him by the hand. We're not going to need it right now. The two of us walked unsteadily out of the room, leaving the bleeding corpse of my ex-husband on the floor. It was still sunrise outside. I had believed we'd get a jump on the day by starting early. It's funny how much control we pretend to have over our own lives. The room next to us had been left cracked open by housekeeping. That would have to do. I led Frankie inside, confirmed that it was empty, and locked it behind us. It would be several hours before management realized that we had shut ourselves into a room that we hadn't paid for, and that was more than enough time. First, I gently took his shoulder in my hands and looked it over. I let out a silent but immense sigh of relief when I saw that Chuck's cut had been shallow and had already stopped bleeding. I kissed it softly. I sat my son down and grabbed his cheeks in my hands. I know what you just saw was really, really hard, but you did so wonderfully. I need you to know that I'm proud of you. I then patted the bed. I also need you to know that it's time for you to get a little rest. Go to sleep. The day will always be waiting for you when you wake up. He looked incredulously at me, but I gave him my best mom face, and he kicked off his shoes and crawled into bed without another word. He was asleep just a few seconds later. I let out an exhausted sigh, then laid down on the bed next to him. I was wary beyond wary, but I forced myself to type. It was that important. I don't think Chuck had believed I was strong enough to live for another person when we were together, and to his credit, he was right. I hadn't been. But becoming a mother meant ceasing to be someone who I wasn't. It might be tricky to understand, but its significance cannot be underestimated. I became someone that he didn't know. Chuck thought that he could cow me into relenting even when my son was being attacked. He would have been right at a certain point in our lives. So he gambled it all. He pushed himself to the breaking point under the belief that my stronger mind was paired with a weaker will, and that gamble cost him his life. By the time he realized that we'd reached the point of no return, it was too late for both of us. That poor bastard died on the spot, but my stronger mind enabled me to stand up and walk away, even if it was just for a few final moments before everything broke. Chuck never believed that I'd be willing to cross that line as well. That was before I'd found something worth destroying my own brain for. Sucks for Chuck. Because I look back on my decision with pain and sadness, but not a single fucking ounce of regret. I made the right choice. It was the only choice. I'm so sorry that I was only strong enough to walk one miserable motel room away from the mess. But at least we were able to leave my ex-husband behind one final time. And at least I got to tuck my son in before the lights went out. Sometimes we fool ourselves, really, into thinking that tomorrow is a guarantee. That may be the most practical way to live, but it's no way to die. All we have at the end is the ability to look back and say, I did that. I can look over at my sleeping son and know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that mine was a life worth living. See, everyone does think their son is special. Nobody wants to hear, this is why my kid is even more special than any other. So I'm not going to say it. I don't need to. He's going to live it. Dear Frankie, I needed to leave an explanation at the end. It's not just for you, it's for the world as well. The only regret I have is that I won't get to watch my incredible boy grow up into an incredible man. But that will happen whether or not you can see me. Please know, however, that I will always see you. Even if my little monkey feels alone at times, I need him to know that I'll forever be there. Just out of sight behind the leaves and the trees. Love you bunches, monkey. Mommy. He was looking around the motel room wildly, trying and failing to understand that the demons, at least these ones, were only in his head. Hey, Chuck, I yelled at him, trying to catch his eye. I kept my left hand tucked into my pocket, with the .22 caliber resting snugly underneath. I didn't want to use it. God knows that Delora would be pissed if I went wasting rare commodities. But God also knew what this magic eight ball of a psycho in front of me was capable of doing. I'm sure Satan knew as well, though I'd be less afraid to meet him, since I bet he'd be much more familiar to a human disposition. You want to see your wife again, huh? The wild-haired, wild-eyed man focused on me. He offered a passing look of recognition. Good. Baby steps. There's my guy. There's my Chuck. I flashed a winning smile. It would have been more effective if my target were 22 years old and four drinks deep, but it was enough to elicit a weak grin from Chuck. They're here? Everything can go back to how it was? He was panting slightly now. I reached over to rest my hand lightly between his shoulders and to stand by his side. Intimate but masculine. And I'll be honest, I would have done just about anything to break eye contact with him. Eye contact is so crucial. But this particular piece of work gave me the heebie-jeebies when I looked at him. Well, maybe everything can go back, Chuck. It really depends on how committed you are to working with us. Mixing hope with disappointment is crucial. You can never give a person all of one or all of the other. That invariably results in either complacency or excessive emotion, and both of those are toxic when they're not intentionally cultivated. I am committed, he shot back, turning to face me. I felt the air ripple with the tiniest shock of waves. Shit, this character was really volatile. I want things to be different, like they were before. His hair was sticking out at odd angles now. I wondered when they'd last ordered him to shower. I gave him a look designed to make him think that I was making a weighty decision. Your son is evil, Chuck. Now, we don't want to hurt him, evil though he may be. We just want to make sure that he can't hurt himself or anybody else. You know he's been hurting Jenny, don't you? Another little shockwave, stronger this time, emanated from his head, and I flexed my left hand. You need to stop blaming yourself, Chuck. He's evil, and you can't change that now. You failed to control him earlier in his life. It's impossible to change the past. I offered soothingly, squeezing his shoulder. But you can make up for it. I turned to face him, resting both hands on his shoulders now. I still avoided eye contact.
I really did think that one wrong glance might be enough of a trigger for him to implode my head. Whatever happens can never be undone. That's the most important rule. But everything can go back to how it was once we have him. He's evil and we need him. Trust me. I squeezed his shoulders and dropped my hands down to my sides, slipping them both deftly into my pockets. It's for his own good. He heaved for several seconds. Honestly, the man looked like a gorilla contemplating his own reflection. Granted, the shit Delore put him through, it likely caused irreversible psychological damage. But the smart money says Chuck the Reject wasn't the twirliest screw in the toolbox to begin with. He suddenly looked like he understood something very important, and that's never good. Well, he's my son. He's my fucking son. I pulled my right hand out of its pocket and plunged a tiny syringe deep into Chuck's shoulder. I could feel the anger rush from his head. A flash of pain exploded on my hand, and I whipped it back in agony. Chuck's eyes glossed over while I cradled my arm. I'd brought him back from the edge, but that wasn't necessarily a good thing. His mind would need every edge it could get when he met Virginia. My heart sank when I looked down at my hand. The entire sleeve of my wool silk Armani jacket had been shredded. I closed my eyes and counted down from five. Control was my job, and that included controlling myself in times of crisis. I opened my eyes and stared intently at the man in front of me. I think you're ready. Let's go, Chuck. He looked back at me dazed. I think I'm ready. Let's go. I smiled, and my smile can be just as lethal. Screams tell us so much. Stop fighting me, Jenny. I sighed. We had known that he'd be outmatched against Mama Bear. You're dying, Chuck. I shook my head. Things weren't looking so hot for the home team. It had been clear from the get-go that it would be emotionally challenging for Jenny to fight back against Chuck, even in his most violent of moments. Our best hope was that she would choose not to defend herself when it was most crucial. It was wildly illogical, and for a passing moment my heart ached at the realization that no one on earth would be wildly illogical for me. I was nearly knocked off balance by the shockwave. My ears popped, and I tasted copper in the back of my mouth. Well, that wasn't good. Time then went by. I was standing in the middle of the parking lot when Virginia stepped outside and then took Frankie by the hand to lead him into the next room. Something was incredibly off about her gait, as though she was only maintaining her balance because she felt pressure to do so. Chuck wasn't with them. I didn't wonder what had become of him either. I didn't hide, of course. Nothing looks so suspicious as a man who has to hide, and nothing appears so invisible as a person who acts like he belongs. They didn't even give me a second glance. I gave them some time, however. They seemed like they needed some time. Besides, the counter at the little diner on the corner had a direct line of sight to the hallway between rooms 13 and 19, and they had an amazing strawberry rhubarb pie. Jenny had locked the door, but I was skilled in getting past a woman's defenses. I creaked it open slowly, knowing that there was really no pleasant sight to hope for. Frankie was curled under the blankets with his mother. I realized the poor bastard had likely discovered Mom at room temperature and was trying to warm her up. A laptop lay open by her side. But I don't know if Frankie had read what was on it. He wasn't looking at it when I found him. Hey, I said softly. When he didn't react, I decided that it was safe to sit on the bed next to him. I noticed that his shoulder was crusted with drying blood, but the damage looked minimal. He didn't turn to me. He wasn't crying. The empty look on his face told me that something deep inside his mind had broken too fundamentally to shed any tears at that moment. I think my mom died, he offered in a ghost of a voice. I nodded slowly. I lost my friend Armani today. He pivoted carefully toward me. I can't tell you to stop hurting, kid. Loving someone means that you're going to hurt one day, and stronger the love, the deeper the hurt. That's just a stone cold fact. So I won't tell you not to be in pain, because you're going to be, regardless of what I say. It just shows how much she loved your mom and how much she loved you. His eyes then focused on mine with growing comprehension and intent. Well, who are you? Why are you here? I drew on my own sadness when grinning back at him, because that's the only honest way to smile. My name is Agent K, Frankie, and I'm here because I really do want to protect children. You can never be overdressed or underdressed with a little black dress, and that much was true. But a little black skirt was much better for running, so it was going to have to do in a pinch. I made it work, and it wasn't difficult. A sleeveless Neiman Marcus top and Jimmy Choo heels completed the look, and those were important. A lot of women feel afraid to sit alone at a bar, exposed, vulnerable. Sure, everyone goes out because she wants to get hit on. But no one wants the type of guy who would hit on her to be the one they end up with. You'll forgive me for sounding arrogant when I explain that people treat me differently than most. Or you won't forgive me after the year I've had. I honestly don't give a fuck. At any rate, the majority of guys stay away from me if I'm alone at the bar. It's counterintuitive, but true. Most simply think that they don't stand a chance, so they never step up to bat. They avert eye contact until the moment I look away, and then they can't stop staring. They also think I don't notice it. I'm not looking for either affirmation or sympathy, good or bad. That's just how it is. If I revel in the designation of being the hot one, then I'm a self-centered bitch. If I deny it, I'm indirectly calling everyone else ugly while actually fishing for compliments. The upside is that it's pretty easy to make strangers do what I want them to. It's a mostly good mixed bag with a lot of practical application. I considered all this methodically. A winning hand doesn't mean shit if you can't play it right. I walked in at about 7:13 p.m. After sitting by myself at the bar for 6 minutes, one guy actually did greasily start walking toward me. It wasn't at all what I needed, so I stared condescendingly at his pants, flashed him a nonplussed look, and he veered off as though he'd always intended to stare out the window by himself. Who says superpowers aren't real? I jumped when the fingers brushed my forearm. I hadn't heard a single footstep approaching me. I have to admit that I was immediately charmed by the man's face. He'd almost certainly had plastic surgery, and it had gone well. My arm tingled where he'd grazed me. It was intimate, yet physically far enough from any part of my body that felt private. Effective for an introduction. He was good. You know, my wife had that same top before she passed, he remarked while managing to avoid staring at my breasts. In the right outfit makes people remember the woman, not the clothes. You both wore it well. He then flashed a lethal smile before turning to the mixologist. Double. I'll take a double. Neat. The man paid with two crisp 20s and left the change before sitting at a booth by himself. The faint scent of a sandalwood trailed in his wake. I hated the fact that my smile was only mostly fake. I can't remember how he broached the conversation when he slid up next to me in pursuit of his second and final drink, which is a sign of how smooth the dialogue had been. Don't get me wrong, he still reeked of douche, but every winning team gets dirt on their clothes. My laugh was actually genuine, which worked in my favor. So, I asked playfully, catching my breath, what do you do for a living? And, what should I call you? He smiled sadly. Let's go with Sylvester. And I'm a field agent. I giggled as though tipsy. A secret agent? Well, I just told you about it, which means it's not that secret, is it? He casually spun his as-yet-untouched drink while I downed the rocks glass that he had not realized was water. Did you want me to show you Andromeda? You really should hear about the legend of the constellation. I showed just the slightest imbalance as I got to my feet. Maybe on the way to my Uber? I offered it up as he tossed down some cash for my drink. I've got an early day tomorrow. I knew he was off his game because the poor bastard didn't even realize I was leading him away from the main exit and into the back alley. And yes, the alley scared the shit out of me. I had intentionally brought no purse or jacket, so he would know that I couldn't be hiding a weapon. I probably never would have realized he kept a pistol hidden in his left pants pocket if the guy hadn't been subconsciously rolling his fingertips over it the entire night. I knew that this could end really, really badly. An overwhelming silence engulfed us after the back door slammed shut. We walked a few steps,
He rested his hands on the small of my back, low enough to be sensitive, high enough to avoid my ass. Maybe, I began slowly, we could share an Uber. Oh shit, I think that's a Prius. Go stop it. The man, Sylvester, jogged several steps toward the end of the alley before slowing back to a walk. He was looking away from me now. I quickly bent over and slipped off my heels, holding one in each hand. My bare feet made no sound as I ran up behind him. We can let that one go, he offered dismissively. I stretched my arms out to my sides before smashing the points of the heels into his temples like a bear trap, and he hit the floor instantly. I leapt onto his chest, straddled him, and pinned his shoulders with my knees. His eyes rolled, trying to focus. For the moment, he was too weak to respond. I threw the shoes to the ground and quickly reached into his pocket, procuring a 22mm handgun. His eyes finally then focused. There's no safety to disable on this gun, so instead of me dramatically clicking it off while I aim the damn thing at your head, let's just assume I won't hesitate. Here I swung the pistol down behind me and pushed it down against his groin. He turned white and gave me a look bordering on admiration. Oh, you're the soldier, he breathed, sounding betrayed. I was looking for someone else, and I was showing you what you needed to see. The boy. Where is his location? He nodded. It doesn't matter if I tell you. You can't save him, and you'd just be giving yourself up. You're not the one with the gun, and I'm calling the shots, I snapped back. Give me his location. It's going to end up badly for both of us and the boy, if you try. But he's at the Stardust Motel, just down the block in room 16. The room key's in my right pocket. He then smiled. When combined with his blanched countenance and bleeding head, the effect was downright chilling. You may have won this round, but my goal really was to just get you into this position. I then smashed the butt of the gun against his forehead. The back of his skull hit the asphalt below with a thud. I stood up as he howled in pain. Not very becoming of a soldier, he slurred after catching his breath. My name, I heaved, is Caitlin. Now go fuck yourself. I turned and sprinted down the alley. I figured that I had about 4 minutes until they descended on the Stardust, so I had to hurry. Wait, he called back. You got the best of me. Getting caught now would be such a waste. I didn't respond as I darted around the corner, never slowing my sprint as I bore down on the motel. I think the guy actually enjoyed facing me, even if he had ended up losing. And he really did think I would lead myself into a trap? Hadn't he learned anything from underestimating me once? He clearly believed that I didn't have it in me to shoot him down, right there in the alley. He obviously never considered that keeping him alive was an intentional choice. Controlling people with my mind is a secret, not so secret, superpower that I have. And men will believe just about anything you want them to, if they think you're going to go home with them. But we'll talk more on that another time.